It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We're back, live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I think it's explosive. I think it's very dynamic. Coach Shane has a bunch of different, answers for a bunch of different defenses, which is important, I think, at the NFL level because, defenses are able to disguise so many different things. Defensive players can get in, to their drop zone from any position on the field with the speed and physicality of it. So I think he has answers to all those things, and it's a very, the play on any given down, and you can have success. So I think there's a lot to like. I'm still learning it. I'm still growing within it, but I think it's pretty explosive.
That's Bears rookie wide receiver Roma Dunze saying this Bears offense could be explosive this year. Be the first explosive offense we've seen in a long, long time here in Chicago. Joining us now to talk about the Bears and the NFL, he is lead NFL analyst for Pro Football Focus. Follow him on Twitter at @PFF_Sam. Pleasure to welcome in Sam Monson. Sam, how are you this evening, my man?
Doing good. How about you guys?
Doing good. You heard Roma Dunze talking about it there. A lot of people around here talking about it. Sam, of Caleb Williams coming in. He inherits DJ Moore. They bring in DeAndre Swift. They got Cole Kmet. They had Roma Dunze, Keenan Allen. People saying this is the best position a Bears quarterback have found themselves in a long time. Who's the last quarterback you can remember in the NFL who lands in a spot that looks this seemingly good to start their career?
Yeah, like not only it might be the best sort of group of skill position players a Bears quarterback has ever had to work with, and mm-hmm. and we were talking on our podcast today. I think it's one of the top three receiving cores if you sort of throw in anybody that's going to catch a football, wide receivers, tight ends, running backs. I think it's one of the top three receiving groups in the NFL all of a sudden. So in the space of 2 years, the Bears have gone from having basically nobody to throw to having one of the best embarrassment of riches in the entire league. And you're right. It's been a long time, I think, since a rookie quarterback came in and had this much to work with in terms of receiving weaponry right off the bat.
I know it's been a few months since the draft. I haven't talked to you since then, Sam. Do you buy the Caleb Williams hype? Do you think he's the guy who can get the most out of that talented group of pass catchers?
Yeah, I think he was the clear best quarterback in this draft class. I think he's a really top-tier prospect. The guy was getting comparisons to Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers, and as much as that's sort of unfair in terms of setting expectations for anybody, stylistically and what he can do, it fits. I mean, he's able to make those special outside of play, outside of structure throws that only a couple of guys in the NFL can make. And kind of similar to Mahomes, the question on him is not the special. It's not the high-end stuff. It's how much can we moderate him and kind of keep him within the confines of an offense more often than he was doing at USC? Was that a product of something inherent in the way he wants to play the game, a little bit too cavalier and too outside of structure? Or was that just a product of him knowing that he needed to put 40 up, otherwise USC wasn't winning a football game? So if you can get him to play within structure a bit more, I think he has genuinely special traits and ability.
Talking with Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus, lead analyst over there here on 670 The Score. One thing that will derail any rookie quarterback, no matter how good he is, no matter how good the weapons around him are, is if the blocking in front of him isn't very good. And there are some pieces that look pretty good on the Bears offensive line, but the complete picture I don't know if Bears fans are seeing it just yet. How do you feel about the guys up front for the Bears?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is going to come down to what we just talked about whether you can change Caleb Williams' style a little bit and have him play, you know, more within structure. Because if they go, Justin Fields sort of held onto the ball on average longer than any quarterback in the NFL. And that's a nightmare for offensive linemen to deal with. Every now and again, he'll make them look good by, you know, getting out of a sack or getting out of a quick instant pressure. But more often than not, having to pass block for 3.5 seconds is just stressing those guys way more than other quarterbacks. Like Justin Fields was holding onto the ball an average of a second longer than Tua Tagovailoa, who was at the other end of the scale. That's an absolute lifetime when it comes to pass blocking. So if Caleb Williams is able to play within structure more often than Justin Fields, without changing anything, that line will immediately look a lot better, because those sort of fractions of a second, you know, they don't sound like much, but they can be the difference between a sack and a hit. They can be the difference between a pressure and nothing, and the quarterback just playing within rhythm. So I think there's a big chance that this line looks significantly better just by changing the quarterback behind it. But then I also think that, you know, they are going to get better. Darnell Wright was a rookie last season and certainly impressed, I think, relative to some of his expectations. I think this group can play better than it did a year ago, even independent of being made to look better by the quarterback.
Yeah, I saw you had Braxton Jones as one of your top-rated offensive linemen in your O-line grades that you gave out recently.
Yeah, I think Braxton Jones has been a very solid, capable starting left tackle. And, you know, he definitely didn't improve necessarily the way we expected him to after his first season. He sort of took a step back last year. But again, I think when you change that dynamic of the quarterback, change the way that offense is structured and is playing within rhythm, I think Braxton Jones could be primed for a bit of a breakout season. Maybe he'll never become an all-pro, but that guy can be, I think, a very good quality left tackle.
On the other side of the ball and staying in the trenches, last year the pass rush was non-existent for the Bears. They make the move for Montez Sweat, and that obviously helped things. 6 sacks when he came over from Washington, but still as a unit, they were not able to get a pass rush on quarterbacks. I saw a tweet from Yannick Ngakoue 8 hours ago that just reads, "He's back and he's doing drills on a field goal post." I don't know if that means that he's coming back to the Bears. Haven't seen anything official, but Ngakoue or no Ngakoue, do you think that the Bears have the guys that they're going to need to put pressure on opposing quarterbacks?
Yeah, well, Sweat certainly made a huge difference. You know, they had the worst pass rush in the NFL by a distance before Montez Sweat arrived. There was nobody getting any kind of consistent pressure, and Sweat at least brought that to the table. He is going to get you a good level of consistent pressure, and he's the only guy that we've seen on that defensive line that's going to do that. Now they need somebody to step forward and give him some help, you know, and I think the real player maybe that they have circled for that would be Gervon Dexter inside. And he's a sort of kind of an unusual player where he was a kind of underachieving run stuffer maybe in college. And what we saw from him last season, actually his best play was rushing the passer. It wasn't great, but it was by far the sort of stronger side of his game. If he can develop and take that step forward in year two and go from being an above average pass rusher on a per snap basis to now being a good, consistent interior threat. Now you've got two guys on that defensive line, and then you're just looking for, you know, complementary pieces at number three and number four. I think certainly they need somebody to step up, whether it's Dexter, whether it's Zach Pickens, or somebody else in that defensive line, but they're looking for that key second player now.
We saw that back seven last year look pretty damn good, even with a questionable pass rush. If they can consistently put some pressure on quarterbacks, that back seven could look downright special in the next couple of years, Sam. Or do you agree with me?
No, it definitely could. I mean, we saw Cleveland, I think, in the last couple of years, a great example of how big a difference that can make. Their secondary, which is stuffed full of these former first and second round corners and safeties, they were getting torched when it was just Myles Garrett and nobody else up front. And then suddenly they bring in Darius Smith, Alvin Tomlinson, Okwara on the other side. And last season, and Jim Schwartz is the defense coordinator, And last season, that secondary was amazing, and they looked like the best defense in football for the majority of the year. So you can definitely make a huge difference to that secondary by getting a more consistent source of pressure up front. You know, Jalen Johnson was arguably the best corner in the NFL last year. They've got a couple of those young corners, Tyreek Stevenson, Terrell Smith, Kyler Gordon inside. I mean, there's a ton of talent there. The only kind of, not even a cautionary tale, just that Jalen Johnson had an amazing year, but cornerback play in today's NFL is just so volatile year to year. You know, yeah. Even top-tier players, they're kind of at the mercy of the players they're going up against week to week. That old adage of, you know, the perfect throw and the perfect catch beats the perfect coverage pretty much every time. It kind of is the reality, you know, and Jalen Johnson could have a season that looks almost the same as last year, but the players he goes up against makes more plays and it doesn't look as special.
Last year we saw, and talking with Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus here on 670 The Score, Rami Makhlouf with you on a Monday night, the last 7-8 games of the season, the Bears defense looked like a top 5, top 10 defense in this league. And that coincided with both the Montez Sweat trade, which we talked about, and Matt Eberflus taking over defensive play calling duties when his defensive coordinator ran into some off-field troubles. Let's just leave it at that. How much were you buying what you saw on the field last year, both from a personnel standpoint and what you saw from Matt Eberflus as sort of a defensive play caller when he took things over?
Yeah, I think that second part is definitely plausible as an explanation. You look at the personnel and you think, look, there's some good players in this defense. There's some young players that I think definitely have the potential to get a lot better. But on paper, this does not look like a group that should be playing like a top five defense in the NFL. But, you know, we've thought for years and we've kind of got some experience of this within PFF and some of the coaches and guys like that that have come through PFF as analysts. When guys start, when they go away from the side of the ball that they're used to coaching or playing in, and they start applying that knowledge to the other side of the ball, I think you get a different product and you get a different kind of point of view from it. And if you listen to Jordan Rodriguez from The Athletic, did a great podcast series last year on those Shanahan, you know, those young coaches called play callers, I think. And one of the consistent sort of threads of all those guys is that they all experience the other side of the ball. So offensive minds, they all spent some time on the defensive side. Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinator in Houston now, he was a defensive coach when he came to PFF as an analyst. And then Kyle Shanahan, when he brought him back from PFF, put him on the offensive side. So I do think there might be something to taking a guy that's traditionally from one side of the ball and sort of applying his knowledge to the other side and some play calling.
Sam, last one for you here. The NFC North, to me, and not just, I mean, maybe it is just because I'm watching it through the lens of being a Bears fan and being here in the Midwest, but the NFC North, to me, is fascinating, as interesting a division as I think there is in this league. You have the Lions making the leap that they made last year, the Packers finding their rhythm with Jordan Love last year and getting better as the season went on, the Vikings doing what they did with a revolving door at quarterback, and then everything we've talked about with the Bears. I feel like this division could fall any which way in terms of how they're stacked up. How do you see the NFC North sort of playing out when all the chips fall?
I'm with you. I think it's a very compelling division. You know, the Lions are trying to show that they are legitimately one of the best teams in the NFL. You know, that last year's NFC championship and being a couple of plays away from the Super Bowl wasn't a fluke, that they are that good and they want to do it again. The Green Bay Packers, I think, because for the second year in a row, they're going to have the youngest roster in the NFL, and they were playing so well with that group late in the year. I think their range of outcomes is extremely broad. Like, they could be one of the best teams in football if that young group all takes a step forward in their development together. Or, you know, they could just be the product of too much youth and too much inexperience and not really improve versus last year. Then you've got Chicago, who, look, they've added so much talent, particularly to the offensive side. That group could be really, really good quite quickly. And then you've got the Vikings, who are a sort of fascinating team with a totally new quarterback for the first time in years, you know, since they signed Kirk Cousins. We finally got a new direction for this whole team. So I think there are four very interesting teams, and I don't think any of them are going to be bad. So it'll be competitive.
That's Sam Monson. Highly recommend following him on Twitter at @PFF_Sam. Check out the podcast as well. And Sam, we do appreciate the time and the insight, my man. Thank you so much.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
And Sam Monson joins me on the Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. He's always so good, man. The accent helps too, but he's just always so good talking football, and especially when you get in the trenches and talk about the lines. I agree with just about everything Sam said there. This could go, and Sean, my producer, Sean Sears, and I talked about this a little earlier in the show. It all looks good on paper, and it certainly could go well. I can't put anything in the lock category when it comes to the Chicago Bears. As good as that defense looked last year, that was kind of a flash in the pan when you're talking about a 7 or 8 game stretch of having Montez Sweat and Matt Eberflus taking over defensive play calling. As good as that looked and as much as that improved things, can they not only maintain that but build on that and improve on that over the course of a 17-game season? When it comes to the offense, love Caleb Williams, love all the pieces that they put around him. Can they block well enough for Caleb Williams? And I don't know anything about the new offensive coordinator. Like, everything sounds good when they talk about him, but that's how guys get jobs, because they've been good to that point in their career, and then they get to that job where they're in over the head and they're actually not ready for it or they're not good at it. So is that the case there? Is Matt Eberflus a good head coach? I feel like we still don't know that. Those questions, and obviously the pass rush question, those questions need to be answered for this team to fulfill all the potential and the promise and the hype that we've given them to this point. But on paper, looks as good as it has in a long, long time. Let's hope that they can live up to that, and they can build on it. We'll hit a quick break. On the other side, a team that hasn't lived up to the hype and the promise, the Chicago Cubs. And one thing I know that sports talk listeners love to do is point fingers and blame people. And we'll do just that when it comes to the Chicago Cubs and their disappointing season. Right after this, Rami Makhlouf with you on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
The number one is we struggled from offense at the catcher position. There's no question about that. And then, you know, I don't think we have any players kind of having, you know, the all-star type seasons offensively. So nobody's kind of exceeding expectations. So that caps it. And then the unlucky part is the runners in scoring position stuff is that's the point where you can kind of point to we just haven't caught breaks there. And that's, you know, I think statistically plays out too. And that hurts you as well.
There's Craig Counsell, Cubs manager, talking with Parkins and Spiegel last week. Catch him every week with those guys right here on your home for Cubs baseball, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Rami Makhlouf with you on a Monday night. Still to come on the show this evening, we'll talk Cubs with Megan Montemuro, Cubs beat writer for the Chicago Tribune. She'll join me at 8 o'clock. Phone lines, text line, open to you from now until then to talk some Cubs at 312-644-6767. Again, you can call or text that line, 312-644-6767. Hit me up on Twitter at 670 The Score or at Rami, R-A-M-I-E, is tweeting. And right now on the show, we're going to do something that I know, especially in the day and age of social media, sports fans, sports talk radio listeners, callers, texters just love to do, man. Just love to do. I know I love to do it. It makes you feel better when things are going wrong. And that's to blame somebody. You know what I mean? Just point a finger and go, it's your fault. You're why we're bad. You're why I'm not happy. And now's just the time to do that at 312-644-6767. It's a little something I've done at every stop I've made in my long and storied radio career. I call it the pie chart of blame. Can I put echo on my voice or anything or any sort of special effect to make that sound more dramatic?
It is the dramatic.
The pie chart of blame is what we're doing here at 312-644-6767. And it's sort of self-explanatory. We all know what a pie chart is. We've all seen them. You know what I mean? It's a circle. And whatever the different things are that we're assigning percentages to, they each get a slice of the pie. It adds up to 100. We're trying to figure out just who is to blame and how much they are to blame when it comes to the Chicago Cubs with the pie chart of blame when it comes to the Cubs and their disappointing 2024 season. 312-644-6767. And here's what's different about this than a lot of the times when sports fans, sports talk radio callers, people on social media want to hand out blame and point fingers. It's always one guy. Or one girl. Oh, it's their fault. And it's never that simple. That's why we need the pie chart, folks. It's never as simple as just one person's fault. It's never just one person's fault. Whatever it is that breaks down and goes bad, it's going to take multiple people and multiple reasons for it to go bad. But who's the most to blame and who deserves what percentage of the blame is what the pie chart of blame determines. And you can get in on it at 312-644-6767. If you still don't get what I'm saying, I'll give you my pie chart of blame, then it'll all make sense. And I'm sure Sean has one as well. The only rule is it has to add up to 100. It has to add up to 100% because that's how pie charts work. And I'll start off at the bottom and I'll work my way up to the top to who is the most to blame for the Cubs' disappointing season. 10% of this is out of your control. And this is sort of a standard number for me. Whether things are going great or things are going terrible, it takes about 10% good luck or bad luck. And when I say, and people hate to hear that because you're not blaming a person and that's not fun. And you're sort of blaming things that are out of everybody's control and that's not fun. You want a person to blame. And trust me, we'll get to that soon. But if you're having a great season, if you win a championship, the NBA playoffs are a great example of this. This past year's NBA playoffs, you need good luck. You need good health. You need guys to stay healthy and not get injured. You need the ball to bounce the right way. You heard Craig Counsell saying things just haven't gone our way sometimes with runners in scoring position. And some of that is just sort of brushing off them being bad, but some of that is true. Hard hit balls hit right at guys. Like, it's just they lost their closer to start the season and Adbert Alzolay. I don't know how much of a difference he would make with this putrid bullpen that they have, but some of this stuff is just out of their control, and it's just bad luck. But that's only 10%. So I'm not letting anybody off the hook in my pie chart of blame. Next up is that guy that we just heard from. And full disclosure, I was a big fan of the move when they hired Craig Counsell. I'm still a big Craig Counsell guy. I'm not ready to throw him out or anything. I'm not ready to bail on Craig Counsell and change my mind that I thought it was a good move. And he's one of, if not the best game day managers that's in Major League Baseball. But bottom line is, he's not getting the best out of these guys. He's just not. And when I say Craig Counsell, that means his whole coaching staff. And you never know how much a coaching staff is to blame for guys not living up to their potential, for not squeezing the most juice out of a lemon, so to speak. But something is not going right here in terms of getting the best out of players. Almost up and down this roster, we see guys that have played better and can play better. And we'll get to that in a second. But they're not. And that's Craig Counsell and his coaching staff's job. It's just that simple. Your job as a coach or a manager is to get peak performance out of your players as often and consistently as possible. And he just hasn't done that. And beyond that, and I'm not a big like rah-rah guy. I don't need managers screaming or turning over tables or throwing bats or Gatorade buckets in the dugout or flipping the trainer's table in the clubhouse. I don't need that. I really don't. But the vibe of this baseball team And that's a manager's job, is sort of to have a good vibe, good feels. And it's hard to have good feels when you're losing as much as they have. But the vibe of this baseball team has not been great. And I don't know if that's him setting the tone. I don't know if it's just things have gotten so bad that it would be impossible to have good vibes. But when he was the manager in Milwaukee, and I've worked and lived in Milwaukee for a long time, I know, seen a lot of Craig Counsell managed teams. They weren't like the fieriest team. I don't know if that's a word. They weren't the most fiery team. Like, they weren't getting into fights with people all the time or anything. And he was always known as sort of being low-key and even-keeled. But they were fun. Like, they always had fun stuff going on. Different celebrations in the dugout, out on the bases, different little gimmicks. There was always good vibes around teams that Craig Counsell managed when he was in Milwaukee, and that is not the case here. Now, in his defense, as I'm assigning 20% of the blame for the Cubs' failings on Craig Counsell, I do have to say, in his defense, one of his strengths from a managing standpoint, a game day manager standpoint, is managing bullpens. And, well, I don't know that anybody could manage this bullpen or do much better than what he's done with it.
Because this is a bummer, man. That's a bummer.
Exactly. It is a bummer, man. So that's my defense of Craig Counsell, is what do you want him to do in some cases? Like, he just doesn't
that's
have.
That's fair, yeah. It's right? Like, I mean, half the guy. Right? I mean, go look at the bullpen to start the year. Look at the bullpen now. Like, there's a bunch of names in there that you didn't see before. Like, I'm sure when Colton Brewer broke his hand on Sunday, I'm sure a lot of Cubs fans were like, wait, who?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And even beyond, like, even if they were healthy, I don't know that this bullpen right. would be great. It'd be better, but as it stands right now, I just don't know what you want Craig Counsell to
they
do.
They didn't give him a lot to work with. That's fair.
Exactly. So 20% to Craig Counsell. I'm asking for your pie chart of blame when it comes to the Chicago Cubs. So far, I'm giving 10% to bad luck and injuries, 20% Craig Counsell. 30% of this goes to Jed Hoyer and management and ownership. And I don't know exactly how you break all that down, because I don't know who's doing what. I don't know how much money the Ricketts are actually giving Jed Hoyer to work with. Like, this is all stuff that happens behind closed doors that we're not privy to. They'll tell us certain things. We don't know how much of it is true. But so I just have to put them all in one group and just say Jed Hoyer, ownership, management as a whole, the people who put together through budget and scouting and development, who put together a major league team roster that we all thought would be a lot better. And it hasn't turned out to be very good. Now, I will say this. They didn't, I didn't, and I said this last segment, didn't have a huge problem losing bidding wars for Shohei Ohtani and Juan Soto and going with Bush and Morel at first and third, because, first of all, you're going to lose bidding wars to the Yankees and the Dodgers of the world. As big as the Cubs and the city of Chicago are, that's just reality. And secondly, like, if you're trying to build something sustainable and long term, you're gonna have to develop some of your own guys. And I was okay with them going with Bush and Morel. And quite frankly, Bush and Morel have not been the problem. The rookies, the young guys that they're sort of giving a little bit of rein to and a little bit of leeway to, they haven't really been the problem. We'll get into who has been the problem in just a second, but it hasn't really been those guys. You do need the power that you're missing, that you would have had with the Shohei or with the Soto. But all in all, I didn't have a huge problem going into the season with the position player group that they had and losing those bidding wars. Where they really messed up, and we just talked about this, was you saw this bullpen collapse last year and cost you a wild card berth. You watched that happen. And then Jed Hoyer added two relievers in the offseason, two relievers who were not of note. And 17 blown saves later.
Just be cool. Everyone be cool.
17 blown saves later, man. 17. Think about where they'd be if they could convert 10 of those. Just 10 more wins of these 17. Heck, 8, 9. They'd be right there. They'd be right on the Brewers' heels. They'd be at or near the top of the wild card picture. But you decided to ignore a bullpen that cost you a wild card berth last year, and here we are 17 blown saves later and looking up at the rest of the NL Central. That's inexcusable. That's why Jed Hoyer owns a huge chunk of the blame chart pie, of the blame pie chart, 30% goes to Jed Hoyer management and the Ricketts ownership. But 40% of this, the last 40%, if you're good at math, you know there was 40% left after I gave 10% of the blame to Craig Council, or 10% to bad luck and injuries, 20% to Craig Council, and then 30% to Jed Hoyer. You know there's 40% left. And this ain't easy to hear. This ain't easy to say, because it's the hardest thing to fix or change. But it's just underperforming players. Like, it's really that simple. Because as much as I'd love to blame Jed Hoyer more, and as much as I'd love to say, fire Jed Hoyer and get somebody in here who could do a better job, I don't know about you guys, I was pretty excited they brought Cody Bellinger back. And he's heating up a little bit, but to this point, he has a 737 OPS, and I think 9 home runs. I thought Nico Horner was a good piece to have at second base and at the top of your lineup. To this point, a 667 OPS. Seiya Suzuki, who's heating up a little bit now, he sits at 787. Ian Happ, who's heating up a little bit now, he sits at 799. But Dansby Swanson, who I was thrilled with that signing when they made it, and I'm assuming most of you also were, and we, along with Jed Hoyer, expected him to be better, he sits at a 622 OPS right now. Those are the five guys that were supposed to be, if not at the top, the most important, most central pieces of a lineup, and not a one of them, not one of them, has an OPS over 800. Three of them sit under 700 right now. I can't fault Jed Hoyer for that. I was fine with Jed Hoyer going into the season with Nico Horner and Cody Bellinger and Seiya Suzuki and Ian Happ and Dansby Swanson. Would have loved to add a Shohei or a Soto to that, for sure. But that was a pretty good foundation of position players and what looked like a good start to putting together a really good lineup. And we saw at the beginning of this season what this lineup could be, and then it completely fell apart. And like I said, Bush, he has an 816 OPS right now. Morel, okay, he's not doing great. He's at 673, but he's heated up, and we've seen some improvements. If we were looking at those five guys I mentioned, Horner, Bellinger, Suzuki, Happ, and Swanson, if they all had OPS in the neighborhood of 800, we're not having this conversation, even with the bullpen being as bad as it is, because those two problems feed into each other. The bullpen never gets a lead of more than 1 to 2 runs, and they feel that pressure. And the offense sees this bullpen not able to hold a 1 or 2 run lead, and they feel like they need to score 10 every night to win a game, and they can't do that, and they feel the pressure. But 40% of this is just guys who should be better, man. Just guys who go out there every day and should be better players. And those five guys in particular are just not good enough at the plate. And if they were, we wouldn't be as upset with Jed Hoyer. We wouldn't be as upset with the bullpen. We wouldn't be as upset with Craig Council, because you'd probably have 8 or 9 more wins. Now, if you had a good bullpen and that offense was doing what they were supposed to do, you might have 16 or 17 more wins and sitting right atop the division along with the Milwaukee Brewers. But alas, here we are, looking up at the entire NL Central. So there's my pie chart of blame. 10% bad luck and injuries, 20% Craig Council, 30% Jed Hoyer, ownership management, and 40% just guys who aren't getting it done out there on the field. Am I letting anyone off the hook? Am I putting too much blame on anybody? What's your pie chart of blame look like when it comes to these Cubs failings? 312-644-6767. Call me, text me. Either one will work. We'll hear from you. We'll hear from my producer, Sean Sears, right after this. Rami Makhlouf with you on 670 The Score on a Monday night.
We're back live with more Rami Mekloff on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Looking at a player like Nico Horner, for example, he's a great example of what a, you know, how much a homegrown player can do for the organization. He's still young. We signed him to an extension, and obviously he did tremendous things for us this year. So I'd love to nothing more than to build a young athletic team that's built from within.
That's Jed Hoyer at the conclusion of last season, saying how he'd like to build the roster. I'm Rami Mekloff with you on The Score on a Monday evening. We'll talk Cubs with Megan Montemuro from the Chicago Tribune coming up at 8 o'clock. I just gave you my pie chart of blame for this disappointing Cubs season. We're passing out blame, but you can't blame just one person. That's lazy. It lacks nuance. So I want your pie chart of blame. I said 10% bad luck and injuries, 20% for Craig Counsell, 30% go to Jed Hoyer, management and ownership. But most of this is just guys underperforming. And he mentioned Nico Horner there. He's one of five guys specifically. And it's not just on five guys, but five guys specifically that I talked about in the last segment that if they didn't perform this year, it was going to be hard for the Cubs to succeed. And that's Horner, Bellinger, Suzuki, Happ, and Swanson. When you have guys that are that important to your lineup and your offense as a whole, and at the same time not performing well, you're going to have a hard time winning baseball games. And that's just the bottom line. So they get most of the blame, but not all of it. What's your pie chart of blame look like? 312-644-6767 is how you can get in on it. Let's go out to my old stomping grounds, Palatine. Jim, you're on The Score. What's up, Jim?
Hey, buddy, you really hit it on the nose. I mean, my father played in the Cubs in the early 40s. He was a catcher. He got injured. But he always said, you got to have good pitching. And that's it right there. If you don't have good pitching, you're not going to win. Look at the team we had in 2016. Had good pitching. And Hendricks, I don't want to badmouth him. He was a great pitcher, but what's he won? One game out of eight? Come on. Why are they using him? You need pitching.
So, yeah, I think the starting rotation has been good enough, more than good enough. That's been the one bright spot and silver lining on this team. It's been one of the better rotations in the National League, but night in, night out, they're handing it off to a bullpen that just can't get the job done.
And look at in 2016, I mean, those relief pitchers, man, they were great. That left-handed pitcher, he threw 100 miles an hour. Nobody could touch him. But that's what you need. You got to have it.
Appreciate the call, Jim. Thanks. And yeah, Aroldis Chapman was amazing in that season. Came with some baggage, obviously, but amazing in that season. And you do kind of need a guy like that at the back end of the bullpen. I don't know if Adbert Alzolay would have been a guy like that. Doubt it. There aren't very many of those going around. Aroldis Chapman's, that is. There are many of those in the world, but it would have helped, and it would have knocked everybody down a peg in terms of their role and their importance to that bullpen. That's why I do got to put 10%. Of the disappointment on just bad luck and injuries. But man, Jed Hoyer watched a bullpen just throw away a season last year. What could have been a pretty special season with the way that the Cubs bounced back after the All-Star game or after the All-Star break and were right there in the thick of the wild card last year and then just blew it. And he watched that happen and didn't do much to address it. That's the most egregious sin of Jed Hoyer and the way that he approached this season was what he did in that bullpen. Again, they needed power. Would have been great to have Shohei. Would have been great to have Soto. But you lost bidding wars for those guys. Or at least those were the reports that you lost bidding wars for those guys. That's going to happen.
Yeah. I agree with a lot with what you said there, Rami. I mean, like, you can't really kill him for not going after some of those guys. Like Shohei Ohtani was going to the Dodgers. It seemed like, you know, to trade those guys for Juan Soto just didn't seem like something they were going to do. That's why I honestly played that clip here from Hoyer. He doesn't want to move a lot of these young guys. He wants to keep them. He wants to utilize them. And he thinks he talked about earlier in that clip how they're controllable players. And that's true. They're cheap talent is what he's saying in a nice way. It's true. They have a ton of value there, and not just as trade pieces, but as players that could come up and be people you could extend, like a Nico Horner. And that's really kind of where I think I stem with this. The Cubs thought they'd have more Nico Horners, Justin Steeles, Christopher Morales coming up here. And that hasn't quite happened here. So my pie chart quickly, and we can go in more detail later here, but I have Hoyer here at 40% in the front office, and that's just kind of where I feel like he's taking the biggest share of this, because I feel like it, you know, a lot of this is on the players, and we'll get to them in a second. But realistically, for me, Hoyer kind of came into the season, at least me looking at this roster, saying like, you need to re-sign Cody Bellinger and you need to add another bat. And even if you couldn't find that elite bat that, you know, makes a massive difference, you just needed more power in your lineup. A guy like Jorge Soler, like Teoscar Hernandez, is having a great season for the Dodgers. There was rumors that Josh Naylor was supposedly a guy that the Cubs were talking to with Cleveland, and maybe Emmanuel Class A in a deal somewhere along the lines of that. That could have solved two problems for the Cubs. That didn't happen, and that kind of felt like that was the only avenue they were going to be able to improve their roster, was trade pieces. And they probably thought they did that with Michael Busch. He's looked great. And like you said, him and Morel, they're trying some things there, and I hope Morel can start kind of taking off with the power, but he's leading the team with home runs still. Busch has looked like a great player. Those guys are doing well. And we get to the players here now where I say at 25%, you're right. Cody Bellinger, Ian Happ, Nico Horner, Dansby Swanson, Seiya Suzuki, that's your core players.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with all those guys is they're all pretty good. None of them are stars. I wouldn't say any of them are like elite offensive players. I think
Dansby Swanson was supposed to be.
Right.
Dansby Swanson and has been the most disappointing guy of that group. And Cody Bellinger last year looked like an MVP candidate. If he could put up those types of numbers, I'd be happy with it.
Exactly. And you're just getting an insane, just all-time low with some of these guys. Like, it just, there's no way they can keep playing this bad. We know there's going to be some way they're going to come out of this, I think. I'm just worried it's going to be too late in the season. Yep. But these players are playing incredibly bad, and that's where the luck comes in. That's 25% for me. You're dealing with a ton of injuries. You're dealing with players just at their career lows all at the same time, on top of having young players like Pete Armstrong, who, like, if he were doing the things he's doing and the Cubs were hitting, we're not magnifying Pete Crow Armstrong, I think, right, quite as much. It's not quite as big of a deal. Christopher Morel having 15 home runs but not really doing a ton at the moment is okay if Cody Bellinger's still batting .307 like he was last year, or Dansby Swanson still getting a ton of doubles, or Nico Horner is stealing bases and turning singles into doubles, doubles into triples, so on and so forth. But they dealt with a ton of injuries. It's hurt them, and it feels like right when they're getting maybe something back, it feels like something else drops out. It's like, okay, and maybe we're getting a reliever, but all of a sudden Ben Brown's hurt now. What do we do with that? That guy was going to be the solution to some other problems. Or, you know, Seiya Suzuki's hurt, and now we're trying to figure out how we're going to play things. Mike Tauchman comes in and plays great. Now Tauchman's hurt. He was your best offensive player. And that shouldn't be the case, but it was. He was their best player.
I honestly, the injuries have been piling up, and just the disappointment has been piling up so much this season. I kind of forgot about Tauchman when I was going through
a 127 weighted runs creation plus before he got hurt. He was their best offensive player, and that shouldn't have been the case. He should be like an accessory to a really good offense. So it's tough because the Cubs were a top offense in the National League. I think they were third overall in runs. I think they were top 10 in the league, maybe 8 last year. This was a group that scored runs. That hasn't happened yet. And I think now I come down to my 10% here. That'll get me to my 100. It's council and the staff. I think the biggest concern I have with this is that they basically removed David Ross and plugged Craig Council into his coaching staff.
Yeah.
Virtually the same people came over outside of the bench coach, Ryan Flaherty, but it's the same offensive, you know, the same batting coach, same hitting coach. It's the same group there. And I honestly liked that idea at first, and I still don't think it's a bad thing, but it could take a moment maybe for Craig to mesh with people. And we've seen, like, Craig is mild mannered. He isn't necessarily going to, like, you know, come at anyone, but he's biting, right?
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. For but sure.
We can get into all this later here. I'll let you throw us to break here.
No, that was great. That was great. All great points. And quite frankly, Craig Council's coaches in Milwaukee were all still under contract with the Brewers, and the Brewers were salty about Craig Council going to their most hated rival 90 minutes to the south, and were not willing to let any of those guys out of contracts to go with Craig Council. So maybe as those contracts expire in coming years, Craig Council is able to put together more of his own staff than, like you said, just being plugged into David Ross's staff that like he was. But I don't put a lot of this. Again, I put, what did I say? I put on Craig. 20% of this is on Craig, is on Craig Council. I don't put a lot of it on him, man, but he's certainly as big a fan of the guy as I am, and as big of a fan as I am of his managing style. I don't put that much on him.
No,
as
you
it
did
seems
nail it
like
though at the beginning
are.
When you were talking though, like he's supposed to be the guy that gets the most out of his team, and he's not doing that.
He's
that
just
was
not.
The whole selling point. So I agree with you there though.
I'll tell you a good thing that you could do regarding the Chicago Cubs. You can meet Ron Coomer from 7 to 8:30 p.m. on Friday, July 19th at his restaurant, Coombs Corner in Lockport. Coombs will meet fans, sign autographs, give away memorabilia, and more. It's all brought to you by BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Go on out and meet Ron Coomer 7 to 8:30 Friday, July 19th at Coombs Corner in Lockport, and catch Ron Coomer and Pat Hughes on the call for every Cubs game right here on your home for Cubs baseball, 670 The Score. More Cubs talk coming up next. I'll talk with Megan Montemuro from the Chicago Tribune. She'll join me, Rami Makhlouf, on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Looking at a player like Nico Hoerner, for example, he's a great example of what a, you know, how much a homegrown player can do for the organization. He's still young. We signed him to an extension, and obviously he did tremendous things for us this year. So I'd love to nothing more than to build a young athletic team that's built from within.
That's Jed Hoyer at the conclusion of last season, saying how he'd like to build the roster. I'm Rami Makhlouf with you on The Score on a Monday evening. We'll talk Cubs with Megan Montemuro from the Chicago Tribune coming up at 8 o'clock. I just gave you my pie chart of blame for this disappointing Cubs season. We're passing out blame, but you can't blame just one person. That's lazy. It lacks nuance. So I want your pie chart of blame. I said 10% bad luck and injuries, 20% for Craig Counsell, 30% go to Jed Hoyer, management and ownership. But most of this is just guys underperforming. And he mentioned Nico Hoerner there. He's one of five guys specifically. And it's not just on five guys, but five guys specifically that I talked about in the last segment that if they didn't perform this year, it was going to be hard for the Cubs to succeed. And that's Hoerner, Bellinger, Suzuki, Happ, and Swanson. When you have guys that are that important to your lineup and your offense as a whole, and at the same time not performing well, you're going to have a hard time winning baseball games. And that's just the bottom line. So they get most of the blame, but not all of it. What's your pie chart of blame look like? 312-644-6767 is how you can get in on it. Let's go out to my old stomping grounds, Palatine. Jim, you're on The Score. What's up, Jim?
Hey, buddy, you really hit it on the nose. I mean, my father played in the Cubs in the early 40s. He was a catcher. He got injured. But he always said, you gotta have good pitching. And that's it right there. If you don't have good pitching, you're not gonna win. Look at the team we had in 2016. Had good pitching. And Hendricks, I don't want to badmouth him. He was a great pitcher, but what's he won? One game out of eight? Come on. Why are they using him? You need pitching.
So, yeah, I think the starting rotation has been good enough, more than good enough. That's been the one bright spot and silver lining on this team. It's been one of the better rotations in the National League, but night in, night out, they're handing it off to a bullpen that just can't get the job done.
And look at in 2016, I mean, those relief pitchers, man, they were great. That left-handed pitcher, he threw 100 miles an hour. Nobody could touch him. But that's what you need. You got to have it.
Appreciate the call, Jim. Thanks. And yeah, Aroldis Chapman was amazing in that season. Came with some baggage, obviously, but amazing in that season. And you do kind of need a guy like that at the back end of the bullpen. I don't know if Adbert Alzolay would have been a guy like that. Doubt it. There aren't very many of those going around. Aroldis Chapman's, that is. There are many of those in the world, but it would have helped, and it would have knocked everybody down a peg in terms of their role and their importance to that bullpen. That's why I do got to put 10%. Of the disappointment on just bad luck and injuries. But man, Jed Hoyer watched a bullpen just throw away a season last year. What could have been a pretty special season with the way that the Cubs bounced back after the All-Star game or after the All-Star break and were right there in the thick of the wild card last year and then just blew it. And he watched that happen and didn't do much to address it. That's the most egregious sin of Jed Hoyer and the way that he approached this season was what he did in that bullpen. Again, they needed power. Would have been great to have Shohei. Would have been great to have Soto. But you lost bidding wars for those guys. Or at least those were the reports that you lost bidding wars for those guys. That's going to happen.
Yeah. I agree with a lot with what you said there, Rami. I mean, like, you can't really kill him for not going after some of those guys. Like Shohei Ohtani was going to the Dodgers. It seemed like, you know, to trade those guys for Juan Soto just didn't seem like something they were going to do. That's why I honestly played that clip here from Hoyer. He doesn't want to move a lot of these young guys. He wants to keep them. He wants to utilize them. And he thinks, he talked about earlier in that clip how they're controllable players. And that's true. They're cheap talent is what he's saying in a nice way. It's true. They have a ton of value there, and not just as trade pieces, but as players that could come up and be people you could extend, like a Nico Horner. And that's really kind of where I think I stem with this. The Cubs thought they'd have more Nico Horners, Justin Steeles, Christopher Morales coming up here. And that hasn't quite happened here. So my pie chart quickly, and we can go in more detail later here, but I have Hoyer here at 40% in the front office, and that's just kind of where I feel like he's taking the biggest share of this, because I feel like a lot of this is on the players, and we'll get to them in a second. But realistically, for me, Hoyer kind of came into the season, at least me looking at this roster, saying, like, you need to re-sign Cody Bellinger and you need to add another bat. And even if you couldn't find that elite bat that, you know, makes a massive difference, you just needed more power in your lineup. A guy like Jorge Soler, like Teoscar Hernandez, is having a great season for the Dodgers. There was rumors that Josh Naylor was supposedly a guy that the Cubs were talking to with Cleveland, and maybe Emmanuel Class A in a deal somewhere along the lines of that. That could have solved two problems for the Cubs. That didn't happen, and that kind of felt like that was the only avenue they were going to be able to improve their roster was trade pieces. And they probably thought they did that with Michael Busch. He's looked great. And like you said, him and Morel, they're trying some things there, and I hope Morel can start kind of taking off with the power, but he's leading the team with home runs still. Busch has looked like a great player. Those guys are doing well. And we get to the players here now where I say at 25%, you're right. Cody Bellinger, Ian Happ, Nico Horner, Dansby Swanson, Seiya Suzuki, that's your core players.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with all those guys is they're all pretty good. None of them are stars. I wouldn't say any of them are like elite offensive players. I think
Dansby Swanson was supposed to be.
Right.
Dansby Swanson and has been the most disappointing guy of that group. And Cody Bellinger last year looked like an MVP candidate. If he could put up those types of numbers, I'd be happy with it.
Exactly. And you're just getting an insane, just all-time low with some of these guys. Like, it just, there's no way they can keep playing this bad. We know there's going to be some way they're going to come out of this, I think. I'm just worried it's going to be too late in the season. Yep. But these players are playing incredibly bad, and that's where the luck comes in. That's 25% for me. You're dealing with a ton of injuries. You're dealing with players just at their career lows all at the same time, on top of having young players like Pete Armstrong, who, like, if he were doing the things he's doing and the Cubs were hitting, we're not magnifying Pete Armstrong, I think, right, quite as much. It's not quite as big of a deal. Christopher Morel having 15 home runs but not really doing a ton at the moment is okay if Cody Bellinger's still batting 307 like he was last year, or Dansby Swanson still getting a ton of doubles, or Nico Horner is stealing bases and turning singles into doubles, doubles into triples, so on and so forth. But they dealt with a ton of injuries. It's hurt them, and it feels like right when they're getting maybe something back, it feels like something else drops out. It's like, okay, and maybe we're getting a reliever, but all of a sudden Ben Brown's hurt now. What do we do with that? That guy was going to be the solution to some other problems. Or, you know, Seiya Suzuki's hurt, and now we're trying to figure out how we're going to play things. Mike Tauchman comes in and plays great. Now Tauchman's hurt. He was your best offensive player. And that shouldn't be the case, but it was. He was their best player.
I honestly, the injuries have been piling up, and just the disappointment has been piling up so much this season. I kind of forgot about Tauchman when I was going through
a 127 weighted runs creation plus before he got hurt. He was their best offensive player, and that shouldn't have been the case. He should be like an accessory to a really good offense. So it's tough because the Cubs were a top offense in the National League. I think they were third overall in runs. I think they were top 10 in the league, maybe 8 last year. This was a group that scored runs. That hasn't happened yet. And I think now I come down to my 10% here that'll get me to my 100. It's Council and the staff. I think the biggest concern I have with this is that they basically removed David Ross and plugged Craig Council into his coaching staff.
Yeah.
Virtually the same people came over outside of the bench coach, Ryan Flaherty, but it's the same offensive, you know, the same batting coach, same hitting coach. It's the same group there. And I honestly liked that idea at first, and I still don't think it's a bad thing, but it could take a moment maybe for Craig to mesh with people. And we've seen, like, Craig is mild mannered. He isn't necessarily going to, like, you know, come at anyone, but he's biting, right?
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. For sure.
We can get into all this later here. I'll let you throw us to break here.
No, that was great. All great points. And quite frankly, Craig Counsell's coaches in Milwaukee were all still under contract with the Brewers, and the Brewers were salty about Craig Counsell going to their most hated rival 90 minutes to the south, and were not willing to let any of those guys out of contracts to go with Craig Counsell. So maybe as those contracts expire in coming years, Craig Counsell is able to put together more of his own staff than, like you said, just being plugged into David Ross's staff that like he was. But I don't put a lot of this. Again, I put, what did I say? I put on Craig. 20% of this is on Craig Counsell. I don't put a lot of it on him, man. But he's certainly as big a fan of the guy as I am, and as big of a fan as I am of his managing style. I don't put that much on him.
No,
as
you
it
did
seems
nail
like
it though at the beginning
are.
When you were talking though, like he's supposed to be the guy that gets the most out of his team, and he's not doing that.
He's
that
just
was
not.
The whole selling point. So I agree with you there though.
I'll tell you a good thing that you could do regarding the Chicago Cubs. You can meet Ron Coomer from 7 to 8:30 p.m. on Friday, July 19th at his restaurant, Coom's Corner in Lockport. Coom will meet fans, sign autographs, give away memorabilia, and more. It's all brought to you by BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Go on out and meet Ron Coomer 7 to 8:30 Friday, July 19th at Coom's Corner in Lockport, and catch Ron Coomer and Pat Hughes on the call for every Cubs game right here on your home for Cubs baseball, 670 The Score. More Cubs talk coming up next. I'll talk with Megan Montemuro from the Chicago Tribune. She'll join me, Rami Makhlouf, on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at tmobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.